Trigger warning, this is going to be a two-part episode. Pretty fucking sure of it. I mean, it's gonna be, it's a fact. I'm also gonna hurt a lot of feelings. Oh wait, that's normal, never mind. Ugh, I hate technical problems. I fucking hate computers. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, go look for a fucking safe space. You can shove your opinion up your ass, that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. And don't forget, my friends and my enemies, the ever-present, the most likely third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. I am the great one himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society on the internet since 1999, podcasting for 11 years. I'm right. I'm always right. I've always been right. I will always be right. I've never been wrong. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect and homes in on and destroys the statist all around the fucking world. Whatever kind of statist you are, it does not matter. You cannot escape the nuclear blast that obliterates all of your fucking whining and crying about who's gonna build the fucking roads. You know who's gonna build the fucking roads? The same people that build the roads right fucking now. People that own road building equipment. Shut the fuck up about the roads. Alright, today, what's that? Oh, thank you. It is today. It's Leap Day. Today is the 29th of February, 2016. You can send us email at God. That's dog spelled backwards. God at cynlibsoc.com. In the control room over there is the lovely and adorable Randy. We've been fucking with the computers for the last hour trying to make this shit work correctly. It's worked before. I don't know why it didn't want to work right today, but fucking technology. Making my life easier. And making it easier for the government to spy on people. But hey, it's for your own good, right? And after all, if the government wasn't reading your emails, well, who would build the roads? All right, I'm going to just attempt to focus. We know how that works. Because I have a lot of stuff to get through. What I want to do today, I want to talk about an essay written by Jack Donovan. And the wonderful thing about this is that he actually recorded this essay, which means that instead of me reading it, which you would normally be subjected to, I can play the audio of him reading his own essay and then throw in my commentary, which will, of course, be plenty of that because we know I can't shut the fuck up. It's going to be good in the sense that I won't have to talk the entire time. Which means that when I do start talking, I won't be able to shut up because that's how I roll. Who is Jack Donovan? Why am I talking about this? Why is this important? So let me, and this is all mostly shit I've talked about before. I don't want to do a lengthy introduction here, but I want to talk about why this is relevant. Who is Jack Donovan? I don't know much about Jack Donovan. He has a website. It is jackdonovan.com, I think, and links will, of course, be in the show notes. It's Jack, J-A-C-K, hyphen, dash, whatever you want to call it. Donovan is D-O-N-O-V-A-N. Now, I first found out about Jack Donovan when I somehow or another stumbled across his book, The Way of Men, and bought the Kindle edition, read it. It's an excellent book. I highly recommend reading this book. And it's possible that at some point in the future, I'm going to do a book discussion series of episodes here on Stating the Obvious talking about this book, because there's a lot of good shit in it. And if you hear chainsaws outside, that's not the rabid femistatist coming to kill me. That's some people outside doing tree work. The essential thesis of The Way of Men is that, oh God, what I'm trying to be essential thesis of the book, Christ. He is an evil, racist, sexist, homophobic pig because Jack Donovan asserts that men are different than women. And we all know that there is no difference between men and women. This is, of course, a social construct, unless you're a tranny with a penis who was born with the mind of a woman, in which case there actually is a difference between men and women because you came out of the womb with the mind of a woman. But otherwise, there is no difference between men and women unless you're a tranny. And Donovan's book essentially goes through the concept that, and God, I don't want to try to fucking condense and simplify because it's a very nuanced book. His assertions are that the purpose of men is to guard the borders, that men need challenges, that men need opportunities to display their manliness, that men need other men to be friends with, men need areas in their life that are separate from women, all sorts of things like that. All the things that the femistatist is going to hate. Everything the femistatist is going to be opposed to. And now we're coming to why this is important from an anarcho-capitalist perspective. All the things that those of you whom I refer to as anarcho-sissies are also going to hate. Now, why is being a man, and that's the central thesis of his book, why is being a man important from an anarcho-capitalist perspective? Here's why. Within the anarchist sphere, there are those of us like myself who are anarcho-capitalist, and then there are the anarcho-sissies. Now, the anarcho-sissies are people who think that ancapidice is essentially just like things are today, only there's no government. Anarcho-sissies include people like Ben Stone, who has said repeatedly that when there is a market demand for freedom, we will get freedom. As I have said, he is incorrect about this because there will never be a market demand for freedom. And there's a qualifier on that, the qualifier being as long as we live in a democratic society. And just bear with me, I'm getting to all this. The anarcho-sissies believe that at some point, people in the United States are just going to get fed up with the government, and why, they're just going to vote the government away, and then everything's going to be wonderful, and there'll be little bunny rabbits and unicorn farts. There's no difference, fundamentally, between these people and the people who voted for Obama and thought they were going to get free health care, and the people who are going to vote for Bernie Sanders and think they're going to get free college, and the people who are going to vote for Donald Trump and think that they're going to make America great again. This is all just sitting around masturbating. None of it's going to happen. So what the anarcho-sissies don't understand is that a stateless society, and by the way, let me throw this out, I don't know what Jack Donovan's politics are. Jack Donovan, as far as I can tell, does not make any claims whatsoever to being an anarchist. He doesn't, as far as I've seen and read, make any particular political claims. I haven't read everything he's written. You know, he might be a Republican, he might be a libertarian. I don't know. I'm not representing him as a anarcho-capitalist. His book is not an anarcho-capitalist book. Jack Donovan, you know, acknowledges, as does any normal person, there is a need for hierarchies, for groups of people, so forth and so forth. And again, even in ancapidice, where there is no centralized state, anytime people come together to do anything, you're going to have a hierarchy and rules emerge from that. This is, of course, what the stupid people who don't understand anarchy don't get, is that the difference between those sets of rules and those hierarchies is that you have the freedom to opt out at any time without somebody using violence to come and force you to participate. right? Here in the United States right now, if I want to drive a car without a driver's license, if I am eventually caught, the threat of violence will be used to either force me to get a license or prevent me from driving, right? If I don't want to pay taxes, you know, if I don't want to hire, if I own a company and I don't want to hire the appropriate number of people with a particular sexual genitalia or a particular skin color, somebody from the government will come to me and use the threat of violence or the threat of taking my money, which is a form of violence, or the threat of putting me in a jail cell, which is violence, to force me to hire people that they think I should be hiring based on skin color, while of course telling me that there is no such thing as race. So in an anarchist society, there are still hierarchies and there are still rules. The difference between a stateless society and a statist society is that you can opt out of the hierarchy, opt out of the rules, without somebody threatening to kill you or use violence against you or put you in a cage or take your property. Now, of course, when you opt out, you also lose access to the benefits, if there are benefits. But again, it's all because, so now I'm talking about what anarchy is, which has nothing particularly to do with this. Gee, I am so good at not tangenting. Tangenting, by the way, is an official new word. It's going to go in the CLS lexicon. I am tangenting again. Randy, what the fuck was I talking about before I started tangenting? Right? He's not in. Yep. Why is this important? Thank you. Why is being a man important? Anarcho-sissies. The anarcho-sissies think that the transition from statist society to stateless society is going to be unicorn farts and bunny rabbits and puppy dogs. And it's not. There is only one conceivable way I can see an actual transition from statist society to stateless society happening. And that requires the total collapse of the federal government of the United States. Now, we know this will happen because no empire survives forever. I know, I understand. When I say that one day the government of the United States, the federal government, will collapse, I am racist, sexist, and homophobic. I know Obama is the president and he's black, and obviously I hate black people, and I know, we just shut the fuck up. Those of you who pretend history isn't real, and of course we know that history is a social construct created by heterosexual white men who work for a living to oppress minorities. But no, Rome fell, Greek fell, Byzantia fell, the United Kingdom fell, Nazi Germany fell, every fucking empire, every government out there has collapsed at some point. As I've talked about before, the only empire nation state that's lasted for an extensive amount of time is, of course, China, and it's gone through multiple changes. And part of my thesis on why China has survived so long is simply because the one thing you can say about the Chinese is, for the most part, they are not imperialistic, unlike the United States of America that has military bases all over the fucking planet. This, again, don't want to go down this rabbit hole and tangent, but at some point, there's a good chance this will all become financially unstable, and the federal government is going to collapse. Now, when I say that, in order for the transition from statist society to stateless society to happen, the federal government must collapse. I mean total collapse. I mean the federal government, not like these little shutdowns where they wrap the World War II monument in cellophane or something so nobody can look at it, and all this other horse shit that, you know, the fucking theater that we get from the federal government. I am talking about the complete, absolute collapse of the federal government, similar to what happened in Russia, the Soviet Union, when it transitioned from the Soviet Union to Russia. But even then, their government did not completely collapse. For a transition to happen from stateist to stateless, the federal government must completely run out of money. There must be no money at all for military bases, military industrial complex, corporate bailouts, welfare checks, food stamps. If that right there does not happen, the odds of a stateless society in the territory currently known as the United States of America are zero. That is the only way a stateless society can have a possibility to happen. There's not going to be a market demand for it because the government, and I'm not going to tangent on this because God knows I've explained this enough, the government of the United States breeds stupid people. It breeds people who are dependent on the government for everything, and there's no way in hell there will ever be a market demand for freedom, because the small number of people who actually want freedom will always be outnumbered vastly by the people who are terrified of freedom and who are completely dependent on the government for everything. This is why democracy is and will always be a failure. Now, if, and again, the government of the United States as a political entity, could collapse without the federal government completely vanishing. Again, just as the Soviet Union became Russia, the Soviet Union collapsed, but the Russian government never completely vanished. We could have, of course, the same thing here. And also, even if the federal government completely collapses, you still have the state governments. But here's the point. Let's get back to why being a man is important. Other than, of course, pissing off feminists, which is just a good time. Being a man is important because if and when this transition period happens, it will be, it will be men who get us through, us, the royal us. It will be men who carry civilization through the turmoil. When governments are shutting down, when government employees are not are not getting paid, when we reach these points where, oh shit, who's going to keep the electricity running? It's not going to be Pajama Boy who keeps the electricity running. It's not going to be the cunt who works in the HR department who keeps the electricity running. It's not going to be the social justice warrior who keeps the electricity going. It's going to be men. Manly men. Men who can lift large objects. Men who can lift heavy objects. Men who can use tools. Men who can repair things. Now think about how often you hear feminists ridiculing men because, well, men like fixing things. Oh, they're so stupid. It's going to take men to get us through. God, my voice. Sorry about that, guys. It's going to take men to get us through the transition period from statist to statelessness. Once we achieve, if we achieve statelessness, if we achieve ancapitalism, as I have said before, ancapitalism is not a safe space. Ancapitalism does not have food stamps and welfare. There will be no WIC payments. There will be no government to enforce child support payments. None of these things will exist in ancapitalism. And in ancapitalism, we will have the thing that statists fear the most. And the title of Jack Donovan's essay is All They Have Is Fear. And this is where we come back to fear, or come to fear. As you will recall, if you're a longtime listener, I did a four-part series, one of the best pieces of stating the obvious I've ever done, in my opinion, about why statism is ultimately rooted in fear. Anytime you talk to someone who is a statist, anytime you talk to someone who believes that there must be a government, there must be this group of people who have the power to force everyone else in a geographical region to do things, and if those people don't do those things, the people in power are allowed, they are permitted to take anyone who does not obey and take their property from them, put them in cages, or even kill them. When you talk to someone who believes that there must be a state in order to do things like build roads, roads being, as Larkin Rose pointed out, places where the ground is flat, because it's so fucking hard to make a place where there's flat ground, right? You need a government to make a flat place on the ground because it's so complex. When you talk to someone who believes that there must be a state that has the power to imprison people, to steal from people, and to kill people, that is fear. That is 100% fear. You show me a statist, I'll show you somebody who is fucking terrified. They are terrified because they know that if the government was not taking things away from people who produce and giving things to them, they know that they would be dead. They know that in an environment where natural selection actually took place, I've explained this 1,000 times, I can't tangent on this, but I just have to remind you. Governments, states, in a statist society, the government circumvents natural selection on all levels, okay? The welfare mother with 7 children by 6 baby daddies, she's only alive because the government has circumvented natural selection. The corporations that got bailouts so that they didn't collapse and fall apart, those corporations only exist because the government has circumvented natural selection. The military-industrial complex that builds bombers and missiles and all this other stuff that no private citizen could afford or would want, they only exist because the government has circumvented natural selection by creating a false need for military and defense. Now, I know if you've come to this podcast and because Jack Donovan's name is in the title there, and you want to hear what I'm saying about this, I know there's a good chance that you're all big on military defense. Yeah, I was in the Army. I was in the infantry. Trust me, I've been taught to kill people. I'm going to make this really short because, well, how can we survive without the Army? How can we survive without the Department of Defense? Here's how we can survive without the Department of Defense. Why in the fuck would first of all, we just stop killing people in other countries and they'll stop hating us. Second of all, why would anybody want to invade the territory known as the United States when you consider how many of us have guns? I mean, I don't have any guns, of course. No, I hate guns. I not have any. There are no... Randy, are there any guns around here? You seen any guns? Nope, no guns. No guns. The point of war is to get resources for your country, right? You invade another country to get their women or to get their gold or to get their coal or to get their oil. And what I'm saying is not necessarily true in the past. And I acknowledge that. In the past, was it necessary to have a military? Have there been legitimate threats of invasion? Absolutely. I'm not talking about the past. The past is over. We can't change that. I mean, I myself have many times stated that yes, the Soviet Union was a military threat to the United States of America. those days are really over with, right? The idea that the Muslims who terrorists are a legitimate threat to the United States is nonsensical. And I've done that shtick. I can't tangent on that right now. The point is, we have reached a point where nobody wants to invade the United States because it's a hell of a lot easier. If we have resources they want, it's a lot easier just to buy the fucking resources. I mean, goodness knows, as much shit over here as China owns, China's not going to invade us. And shit, if somebody invaded, again, you know, if the Department of Defense disappeared, if somebody else invaded the United States, shit, China might come to defend us because they own so much shit over here that they'd be standing to lose so much money. So I know it's hard to visualize the idea that we could survive without national defense. And I'm tangenting. But again, when you say, well, we have to have a government so that we can have the Department of Defense to protect us, that's fear. You're afraid somebody's going to invade and take your stuff away from you, or kill you, or kill your loved ones, or kill your family, or imprison you. It's all fear. And as I've said, statism is based on fear. All statists are afraid. They're afraid somebody's going to hurt them. They're afraid they're not going to get their free birth control. They're afraid they're not going to be able to get an abortion. They're afraid they're not going to get free college. They're afraid they're not going to get their food stamps. They're afraid somebody's going to call them a name. And you know, this is where we've reached with the medicated generation and the most sensitive generation and the dumbest generation and the millennials, you know, this fear that somebody's going to disagree with me. And all of this, of course, accumulates with the femistatist. And as I have said before, this has all coalesced into what is the prime directive of society in the United States of America. Say it with me if you're here. The prime directive of society in the United States of America right now is that no white woman must ever experience discomfort. Not emotional discomfort, if you say something she doesn't agree with. Not intellectual discomfort, if you use logic or if you do math. This is considered rape by many women. She must experience no physical discomfort. You know, she has to get, if she's not getting enough money, you got to give her welfare, you got to give her food stamps. Just if she's having any, some white knight's going to run over there, oh, let me carry that heavy box for you, even though women are strong and independent and can do anything a man can do. Anytime something happens that results in a white woman experiencing discomfort, there's going to be a law. There's going to be the white knight swooping in. There's going to be the femistatist screeching about the patriarchy. There's going to be speeches. There's going to be politicians running over each other to kiss women's asses. And again, it all comes back to fear. All comes back to fear. White women in the United States are terrified of experiencing discomfort. At some point, to some extent, even if there is not a complete collapse of the federal government, even if we don't get a stateless society, even if we don't have riots in the streets, you know, to some extent, the statist society we currently exist in is going to collapse. The empire of the United States is like all empires. It's going to come to an end. Yeah, will it happen in my lifetime? Probably not. Though it would be kind of interesting to see it happen. Will it happen in your lifetime? Who knows? It's going to happen in somebody's lifetime. And when that happens, men, actual men, who can lift heavy objects, repair equipment, climb up in trees and trim trees like the guys outside the window are doing. Men who are not sensitive little pajama boys who are terrified of everything are going to be required. And this is why I spend a lot of time on this podcast talking not about anarcho-capitalism, because, I mean, again, it's don't initiate aggression against other people, don't tolerate aggression being initiated against you, and don't steal other people's stuff. That's anarcho-capitalism. There's really only so many different ways you can say that and explain that. I mean, it's so simple that you have to go to college in order to be too stupid to understand it. This is why I spend a significant amount of time on this podcast talking about things I've read in the Manosphere, talking about self-awareness, here lately talking about eating nutritious food, talking about spending time with yourself, talking about being able to create value for other people instead of being a fucking welfare recipient or working for a nonprofit or some shit where you're just getting government money that's going to dry up one day. Here lately, lifting weights. I slacked off yesterday, did not lift weights. I need to do a lot of things. In theory, what's going to happen today? I did go trail running yesterday. Oh my God, it was gorgeous. Oh, the weather was fantastic. Oh, it was beautiful. In theory, what's going to happen today is I'm going to record these podcasts. We're going to have breakfast. Then I'm going to go trail running. I'm going to go buy a fucking weightlifting belt if these fucking assholes have one. Why do you have an email address on your website for people to send questions if you're not going to respond? And then I'm going to go to the gym. We'll see how that works out. Part of Let me rephrase this. Let me start this over. Anarcho-capitalism, as I have said before, got this from Aristotle in The Politics. Good book. You should read it. Anarcho-capitalism, a stateless society, let me put it that way, and capitalism will require that people are capable of being independent within interdependence. And again, I know that sounds contradictory because, you know, logic hurts and everything like that, and math is patriarchy. Without tangenting too much, what this means is you have to be able to exist within a group of people, and you have to be able to contribute something to that group so that that group will contribute back to you, and thus you can be independent and not dependent. Well, but aren't you dependent on the group? No, you're not dependent on the group. You are interdependent with them. Now, of course, there are people who, yes, there are some people out there who can go live in the mountain and build their own house and grow their own crops and completely live on their own without a network of people around them. And God love those of you who can do that. But for most people, and I've said before, humans are social animals. We like other people. We like being around other people. We want to be in a group of people. So to be in a group of people, you have to be able to get things from them, right? You grow food, they make clothes. You give them some food, they give you some clothes. That's the interdependence. Being interdependent like that is what makes you independent. If what you get from them is redistribution of tax money and welfare and the government forcing them to not make fun of you because you're a pajama boy, that's not independence. That's not interdependence. That's being a parasite. In Ancapadice, there will be no safe spaces for the parasites. The parasites will die off. Because if the only thing you can contribute to a group of people is telling them they're racist, sexist, and homophobic, well, they're not going to give you any resources. They're not going to do anything to help you stay alive. You're going to die of starvation. This is why the books like The Way of Men are important to you as a man if you have any desire to survive the demise of the federal government. Randy, how am I doing on tangenting? Oh, this is brilliant. We're 36 minutes into the podcast, haven't even got to the fucking material yet. All right, it's probably going to be a three-parter at this point, because I can't shut the fuck up. This is a long introduction, but I think it's important. Now, let's try to get to the fucking subject here. Fear. Again, the name of Jack Donovan's essay here is All They Have Is Fear. All they have is fear. Statists have nothing but fear. We all know the saying, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If the only lens through which you can see the world is fear, and this is true of statist, of all statist, femistatist, statheist, left-wing statist, right-wing statist, homo statist, tranny statist, all statist people see the world through the lens of fear. This is ultimately what makes them who they are. It's being terrified. And being as that's the only lens they can view the world through, that is, of course, what they project on everyone else, and that is what they use to rationalize in so much as they can rationalize and intellectualize in so much as they can think everything around them. Political correctness, tolerance, diversity, multiculturalism, all of this stuff is just a manifestation of fear. And Jack Donovan, in this essay, I think distills it very effectively and efficiently and intelligently. And thus, at 38 minutes into the podcast, we're going to start playing this. And I will interrupt it, probably frequently, to say, yeah, go Jack Donovan, that's so true, and throw in some commentary. I'm trying to think right offhand, because we did just listen to this before, to give to sort of freshen it in my mind. I'm trying to remember if there's anything in here I actually disagree with. Right offhand, I don't think there is, but we'll find out. All right, whew. Randy, shall we do this finally? Hit the play button.
This is Jack Donovan, author of The Way of Men, and you are listening to a special audio essay edition of Start the World.
Again,
this essay is titled, All They Have Is Fear.
The link will be in the show notes.
All they have is fear. Progressives have only one good trick, and men keep falling for it.
True.
They keep calling you a coward, so that you'll do or say whatever they want to prove that you are not a coward.
Exactly. All right, they didn't get far. And this is important for you to understand. It's true. Everything. It's all just name-calling. It's important to remember, as I've said this before, I call people names, but my name-calling is a prelude to explaining why you're wrong, right? As I have said before, as soon as somebody you're disagreeing with calls you a racist, that means you've won. It means they have run out of any kind of actual legitimate arguments against whatever it is you're saying. I'll save it because I want to, we're 40 minutes into the cast. I want to at least play some of this essay. But this is just I say just because you guys know me, I don't fucking do interwebs and keep up with news and shit. I just saw this morning. Yeah, apparently we have now reached the point I made fun in the previous podcast of somebody who is pointing out that Donald Trump rode in an airplane and Adolf Hitler rode in an airplane. Therefore, Donald Trump is like Adolf Hitler, right? And I pointed out that this shows how desperate people are getting to find something on Donald Trump. Well, lo and sure enough, we have reached the point. Donald Trump has now been accused of something, something, something with the Ku Klux Klan, right? As soon as somebody starts trying to tie you to the Ku Klux Klan, you know they've run out of arguments. Now, as I've said, I could probably sit down, you give me a couple of hours, I could easily come up with 200 reasons, 200 legitimate, logical, rational reasons I can back up with some form of empirical data that Donald Trump should not be president. The fact that people have had to resort to Ku Klux Klan shows you that they are not intelligent enough to come up with any fucking reasons Donald Trump should not be president. It's an admission on their part of defeat and failure. It's them standing up and saying, hey, we are so fucking stupid and retarded that the only thing we can come up with is Ku Klux Klan. I'll talk about this more in depth when I get to the appropriate part in the essay, because I'm tangenting again. So, great one. Shut the fuck up and let Jack Donovan talk. Because I saw Jack Donovan in a video. He's a big motherfucker. He could kick my ass. So I should not interrupt him. He's fucking big, man. He looks like a bulldozer. I mean that he looks like a bulldozer with muscles, not a bulldozer with fat.
If they want you to accept a group of outsiders, they call you a xenophobe to dismiss any rational concerns you might have about the motivations of strangers. The only way to prove that you don't have an irrational fear of foreigners is to welcome them with open arms and without questions.
And let them rape your women.
If you question the sanity of a man who can't be who he really is until someone surgically removes his dick, they call you a transphobe.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to prove you are not afraid of trannies is to agree that transsexuals are not only sane, but heroic, and should be welcome.
Exactly. Heroic, yes. And, well, they're so heroic. And he'll talk about this later. But what is... There's nothing heroic about this. Well, anyway, let me let Jack Donovan say it. He's going to say it later. And then I'll comment on it.
In any women's restroom. Because you don't want to be afraid.
Right, and again, it's the trannies using butt rhetoric. Again, I'll just throw it again. I don't care. Just go to the fucking bathroom and take a... Again, this... right, again, this is what they make a big deal out of. Is, well, we have to make sure the trannies can use the bathroom without getting harassed. Nobody real... I've said it before, I'm saying again. For the most part, sorry guys, nobody really gives a shit what bathroom you trannies take a piss in. Go in the goddamn stall, close the door, nobody else in the bathroom can see you, nobody knows if you have a vagina, nobody knows if you have a penis, nobody knows if you have a vagina and a penis, nobody knows if you have a fake vagina or a fake penis, nobody fucking knows. Just go in there, close the fucking door, take a piss, stop fucking making a big deal out of it and screaming about how everybody's so afraid of you. We're not afraid of you. Nobody's afraid of you. Nobody is fucking afraid of you. We just want you to shut the fuck up, stop whining, stop playing the victim card, and stop getting my goddamn tax money, okay? We are not afraid of you. We're just fucking tired of you being whiny little victim card playing parasites. That is not fear. That's not fear. Again, you interpret it as fear because fear is the lens through which you see the entire fucking cosmos.
If you reject any demand made by any woman, well, you're just afraid of a strong woman.
Again, what is the prime directive of society in the United States of America? No white woman must ever experience discomfort. Women are strong and independent, and you're scared of them, but oh look, that woman's carrying a heavy object. Why don't you go pick that up for her?
This accusation has been repeated so many times that a substantial portion of the population actually seems to believe that men are, at the very core of their being, constitutionally terrified.
Right.
By any woman with attitude.
Yes, we're so terrified of you. Again, it's not fear.
There's probably some truth to this, but
we just want you to
only
shut up.
To the extent that men would rather avoid the frustrating reality that no matter how strong a woman claims to be or what she says, no man or woman on earth will ever forgive a man for knocking her the fuck out.
Wrong. I will forgive you for knocking a woman out. If she needs to be knocked out, where that comedy piece I saw on YouTube where the guy's saying, what do you mean there's no reason to hit a woman? It's like, I can think of like 14 reasons to hit a woman. I can wake up in the morning hungover and think of 8 reasons to hit a woman without even trying. You know, as he points out, I says, so you marry a woman, she has sex with your best friend, she kills your, you know, but of course, there's lots of reasons to hit a woman. As he said, doesn't mean you should, which I agree. Non-aggression principle. I'm not saying you should hit a woman. Unless she hits you first. And again, you're strong and independent. You're equal. You can do anything a man can do. And you can do it better. And this is one place where I agree. You are equal. If a man initiates physical violence against me, I'm going to take the motherfucker out. If a woman initiates physical aggression against me, I'm going to smack the shit out of her. And again, as I've said before, it should be proportional, right? If a woman just gives me a nice little tap on the face, open palm slap, that doesn't mean I take an iron pipe and bash her head in, but it does mean that I turn around and I take my hand with open palm and I smack her across the face. Your response is proportional. I know that's hard for you to understand because you're a feminist cunt, but nobody cares if you, because you can't understand. You don't have the ability to understand. If you were capable of thinking, you would not be a femistatist. So yes, if you smack a woman and you've got a good reason for smacking a woman, I'll forgive you.
To prove that they are not afraid of women, men end up giving women whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. And because they want sex.
They can't stand up to women.
And because they want sex.
The way they stand up to each other.
And because they want sex.
Progressives get men to do whatever they want by manipulating our fear of being afraid. When you recognize this manipulation, you'll begin to see it in nearly every argument appealing to men and every progressive narrative written about men.
And you do. Fear
their strategy
always there.
Is to portray masculine men, even men who have demonstrated courage in battle, or in legitimately heroic endeavors, where they have faced and overcome fear, as being driven primarily by fear and a sense of inadequacy.
Right, men are always feeling inadequate.
It may be tempting to say that this strategy is a reflection of their own fear.
It's tempting and it's true.
That they are so defined by their own fear and weakness that they can't imagine anyone
they are
being motivated by anything but fear.
And yes, that is exactly the truth. The statist is so motivated by fear that they cannot imagine other people being motivated by anything other than fear. Talked about this before. We, as humans, we make assumptions on other people based on ourselves. It's like when I'm in a coffee shop and I have to go to the bathroom, I walk away, or when I'm at the brewery, I leave my computer sitting there on the table and I go to the bathroom because I operate under this assumption. This is also partially environmentally because of where I'm at and the culture around here and everything else. I expect nobody's going to steal my computer because if somebody else gets up from their table and goes to the bathroom, I'm not going to go steal their computer. This is why I've said, whenever somebody says to you, without the government, well, people would just kill each other and rape women and they'd be out of control. What this person is telling you is that if there were no government, he would kill other people and rape women. We, as humans, take the way we would behave and we project it on other people. We take the things that we know and don't know and project it on other people. And this includes me. I've said it lots of times. It's like, I just figure that if I know something, because I'm not a fucking genius. I mean, if I know something or if I can understand something, I usually assume other people can too. And I know that's not true, and I have to overcome that, but that is the natural human tendency. And so because the statist, the social justice warrior, the femistatist, you know, whatever, they're all the same thing. Again, you can't be a social justice warrior. It's like when I see these anarcho-feminists. You cannot be a feminist and an anarchist. This is why I use the term, coined the term femistatist. You cannot be a feminist without being a statist. They are completely inseparable. Social justice warrior, same thing. You cannot be a social justice warrior without being a statist. The two are completely inseparable. This is why the social justice warrior sees everybody around them as doing what they're doing out of fear. You're scared of women. You're scared of black people. You're scared of Muslims. You're scared of change. You're scared of everything. And no, it's not. We're not scared of shit. We're just tired of supporting parasites. We're tired of being told that we're afraid. We're tired of, you know, being accused of being rapist because we look at women or talk to women. And anyway, hold on. We'll be back with part two. We're going to maybe finish the essay. The essay is 28 minutes long. We're 4.5 minutes into it. We'll see. Maybe this will be a two-part episode. That would be kind of nice because I want to go trail running. It's already 10:30 and it's looking pretty sunshiny and sexy outside. Almost as sexy as I am. Oh my God, did I just rape a woman by saying I'm sexy? Oh, patriarchal oppression.